You're part of that history, whether you joined last year or 18 or 19 years ago. Before we get started, I just want to introduce our keynote speaker from Cornwall. We're going to be introducing him throughout the gathering, and that's Gary Trigidja. Gary, thanks for being here and bringing the Viscorla Festival to Central California, which we will learn about further when Gary talks about the festival and the China clay country. And you all have the printed program in your hands, which remarkably matches the program published in the newsletter a few months ago.
Yeah, very good.
So now that
also matches the program we're going to have.
That only happened because at every stage we had a disclaimer that said, "Do not believe this program is considered exchange." And even the program in your hands, there is such a disclaimer. It's only because of putting in those disclaimers that things have actually worked out the way that they have. If we did put that in, it would be completely helter skelter. Yeah. And there's an advertisement in the program for the Tea Cozy in Cambria. And I think some of you may be planning to drive out there to have lunch or to have tea tomorrow afternoon. If you're planning to do that, phone the Tea Cozy in advance, because it's limited seating, and so they need to schedule you. And so you may want to call them first thing in the morning. If not tonight, maybe they've got an answering machine.
I was there today and I talked to the man.
Yes.
He said they do have pasties there.
They do have pasties there, which is why we are recommending the Tea Cozy. That's right. So it is the finest Cornish pasty in Central California.
That has a ring.
Yeah, I know. That's a little bit of a
So this is what I want to do. It's a little bit of a game, so be patient with me. But I'm going to read, working backwards, the date and the place of all our gatherings. And if you were at that gathering, I want you to raise your hand. So, 2009, the International Gathering in Grass Valley. 2008, Sonora. Just about everybody here. You were there. Yeah, you were there. 2007, now that's when we did kind of a dry run of the 2009 gathering. So that was in Grass Valley, Nevada City. And we sampled all of the things that people did in 2009. 2006, we were in San Diego. Now, 2005, I'm a little hazy on that one, but I think that was Sacramento. Is that right?
Yes.
Sacramento.
Was that the train museum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just
jammed it out.
And I think, I'm not sure who was our speaker at that one. I know Moira was in San Diego.
Moira, the train guy. The guy
oh, that's right.
The guy was the train for that.
That's right. He talked on the narrow gauge.
Yeah.
And then 2004 was also Nevada County. I don't have a recollection. That was Nevada City. Right. That's Nevada City.
And the guy with all the bagpipes.
That's right. We went back to Nevada City, which was where the club had their charter gathering. And 2004, we were in Nevada City. 2003, we're in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Maritime Museum.
San Pedro.
San Pedro, and Captain Hogg was our speaker from the new Maritime Museum in Cornwall. And we rode out on the tall ships out of the harbor. Up on the rigging. Exactly right. 2002 was in Jackson.
Right.
You were there.
They know.
Right. This is when Robin House was president. And 2001 was Mariposa. So Joe and Maureen can just keep their hands up. And in year 2000, Russ Pierce was president. We were in Grass Valley, Nevada City. In 1999, we were in San Diego, and we had a presentation on the Cornish in South Africa.
Richard Daw
was here and gave a presentation and had slides and so forth out on a patio where we had dinner. In Old Town, that's right. 1998, we were at New Almaden, and we actually had dinner in, our banquet dinner was in Campbell. 1997, I was president, and we had our gathering in Grass Valley. 1996 was Barstow. Barstow, Calico. And we went out to the Calico Ghost Town, and we stayed at the Super 8. At the Super 8 in Barstow. 1995 was sort of a quixotic mission into the wilderness. We went to Virginia City to try to rally the Cornish in Nevada. And we did find one Cornishman, and that was Ron James, who is the state historic officer in the state of Nevada. And he gave us a tour of Virginia City. He's a pup. He's written a wonderful book. Yes, he was. He talked last year. He talked last year. 1994 was in Sonora. I think it was a Black Oaks Hotel at our gathering. It was a nice event.
Soulsbyville, wasn't it?
And we went out to Soulsbyville to go to church, to go to the Methodist church. I think we went out there on Saturday.
They fixed a pasty.
Oh, that's right. We had pasties at the Methodist church in Soulsbyville, which was entirely a Cornish institution. In 1993, we hosted the North American gathering for the Cornish American Heritage Society in Sacramento. Joe was our charter president. And so how many were there for that one? Just a few. And then, in 1992, we had our charter gathering in Nevada City. And we gathered, I think most of us lodged at the Trolley Junction is the restaurant.
Isn't it Sierra?
What's the hotel?
Sierra Queen? Is that
Sierra
what
Queen.
Northern Queen. Yeah, we lodged at the Northern Queen. Joe and Maureen got one of the chalets at the Northern Queen, and we actually met initially in their kind of cabin apartment that they had there, and then we had a dinner in Nevada City, and our speaker was Jack Clark, was written, subsequently has published a book on the Idaho-Maryland mine. Ed Tyson was there, the late Ed Tyson, who was the librarian at the Historical Library in Nevada City. And so that's all of our gatherings. In 1991, I think about October, we've got the date in the scrapbook over here, we had our first meeting organized by Joe and Maureen in Stockton,
November 16th,
to be precise. And we met in a bowling alley, which, as you all know, had a lot of significance for the sport. And they served a very nice meal. And so who was there for that? Yes.
I didn't hear a nice ceremony.
That was just the luncheon.
Right. We've had some other luncheons. Because Knight's Ferry, as you mentioned, more than once.
We've been twice.
The plumbing was all frozen.
One time the plumbing was frozen, and we've had events at New Almaden. We had a fall luncheon at New Almaden 1 year. And we've had a number of fall luncheons in San Diego.
You did one at Sunnyvale.
Yes, the one in Sunnyvale.
And the Smitherums have had luncheons in their home in the fall in Santa Barbara.
And the mom did them in Kilroy for several years.
Yes.
And we had
an event at New Almaden, I think in 1996, called Methodist Church Day. It was sponsored in part by the Cornish Cousins and by the New Almaden Park Association, in which we gathered a lot of Cornish people, a lot of our members, and a lot of others who came back for the centennial of that Methodist church there that no longer is standing. And we probably had some other events. I know we had some luncheons in Grass Valley.
Who was the person you said used to have the sing-alongs at his house all the time?
I don't know that.
The band choir from Mosul that came to Island, remember that?
Yes. That's right. That was another event that we co-sponsored, which when the Mosul Male Voice Choir came to California, and I believe that was in the fall.
So
we had an event for them. We had some kind of dinner for them at New Almaden?
Yeah, we had the dinners at Roadhouse, whatever the closest one to join in to New Almaden.
Yes, right. There's a sort of cafe.
The choir.
Yeah, there's a cafe, and then we went to the Almaden United Methodist Church. The choir performed there. And we also took them on a trip, I don't know if it was that day or the day after. We took them over to Roaring Camp in Felton, California, where they have a narrow gauge railroad. And so the choir rode the narrow gauge up and down the hill.
Singing all the way.
Singing most of the way. That's right. Yeah. There was some entertainer, I remember at the park where the railroad is, there was an entertainer, the usual thing, someone with a microphone and a couple amplifiers playing a guitar, and the Cornish choir came up and kind of joined in, and it sort of became this big event, and people started crowding around, and I think everyone, including the owners of Roaring Camp, were very pleased by that. So what I'd like to ask you, and I'm going to start with Joe and Maureen, our founders and our charter president. And then I'm going to turn to Dick Chamberlain. But what I'd like to ask each of you to share is when you first came to the Cornish Cousins, or the gathering you best remember, or some occasion you remember. And I would be interested in knowing how you found out about this group. I know it was my circumstance, and I have heard this from others, that I had to go to Cornwall to find out about Cornish Cousins in America. And then subsequently, I was in touch with Joe and Maureen Roberts. I think you all focused. And I think that was Dick's experience, too. So I think a lot of people had to go to Cornwall to find out about Cornish Cousins here. But it would be interesting to know how you became part of this group. So let's start with Joe and Maureen. Is there anything you'd like to talk to us about?
He wants to sit here.
About the old days?
He wants to stay here and come up there.
You can stand or you can sit, whatever you think would be nice.
Well, you probably can't see us if we don't stand.
Well, there you go. Well, that's an argument for standing.
I think it's interesting what you said, that you had to go to Cornwall to find a Cornish organization, because actually the genesis of our club began in Wales in a little overcrowded B&B in 1978. Joe and I had been joined by my parents, and we had just come from our first trip into Cornwall, and we were on our way to Ireland when we stayed in a place in Wales that was overcrowded. They had to stay in one place and we stayed in another. But the place where they were staying, of course, they signed the register. And then we, of course, went on to Ireland, never gave it another thought. But 2 weeks later, a man by the name of Paul Lidicote from Michigan stayed in that same B&B, and it was his usual practice to look into the registry for American names, and lo and behold, there was an American, and even better yet, they had the same name as him, Mr. and Mrs. Harold Lidicote. So he was thrilled. When he got home, he called my parents and made arrangements to come to California the next year. He was going to visit anyway, and to meet them. So he came, and some of you may recognize the name of Paul Lidicote as being the founder of the Cornish American Heritage Society. And one thing that Paul really wanted to do was to found a chapter of the organization in California, because the people in the Midwest were dying to get to California. But I think he thought my parents might be the answer, but he was very wrong. My parents weren't at all interested. They liked Paul very much, but we were there, and we were interested not in a chapter, but we were interested in the organization. So we joined, and we began going to the different gatherings around. But we never really met any other Californians at those gatherings until 1991, dear?
Yeah, no, okay. August.
When we went to Victoria, British Columbia. And you may not know, but in the early years of the Heritage Society, they didn't meet like you would today in a hotel. We always met in a university and stayed in their dorms and ate at their cafeterias. All their facilities were for our use. And it was in the summertime. And this was because Paul was an educator back in Michigan, so he used all of his connections to make those. But it made it very inexpensive for us to stay. Well, when we were in Victoria, lo and behold, in our dorm, there was 13 other Californians, which was absolutely astounding. And there was a total of 15 of us all together, and we were just thrilled. We had a grand time. And so it just seemed like, after Paul pushing all these years for us to start, when this seemed the best time. So we did. Just before we left, we met in that dorm and made up our mind we would meet in that following November. This was August, and in November we would meet in Stockton at some place. It turned out to be the bowling alley. And just test the waters and see how many in California were really interested in a Cornish organization. So we took up a little collection for sending out the mailing and that sort of thing. And armed with the membership list from CAHS, we sent out things in the mail. And we ended up with 35 very enthusiastic Cornishmen from California. And they decided they definitely wanted a chapter, or they wanted a club. Let's put that make it that way, because I'm not sure if it was at that meeting, which was the organization meeting, or the charter meeting, which was the next year, that they decided they did not want to be part of the Heritage Society. They wanted to be affiliated with them, but they wanted their own set of bylaws rather than under the constitution of the society. So that's kind of where we started, and I'll let Joe or Gage. Gage was also there. There's a number of us that were still there. And I did bring the pictures, and you'll see, I think they're pretty much what Paul, what Gage has over there, the same pictures. One taken at the bowling alley, and one taken there in Grass Valley, Nevada. I was called Grass Valley, but it really was Nevada City. But before I quit, I wanted to tell you, too, about a new Passy place, folks. This is in Georgetown, which is above or below south. South of Placerville.
North of Placerville.
I thought you said south. Well, anyway, it's right near. It's about 45 minutes from Placerville. And it's a new place called Ruckachuckies. And it's named strictly Pasties. And a friend sent this to me from the Mountain Democrats. So, and she has tested it out. She said it's good. So you have, I think you'd enjoy Georgetown itself. It's very quaint, let's put it that way. But just be prepared. It is a mountain town, and the people are not going to be quite like they are here.
Don't get off the main road.
Yeah, well, I mean, the people are very nice. They're just a little different, and I have dozens of cousins up there, so you're welcome to look at this.
Ruckachuckee is the name of a waterfall on the middle fork of the American River that's not runnable by raft. You have to take your...
You want to tell them what it means? I didn't. She didn't have a clue, and I hadn't either, what a clue, whatever that was.
Joe, do you want to... Tell us something about the early days.
Well, I just can add a little bit to it. I was reading my notes, which followed hers pretty close. But as I don't think she mentioned the fact that our first gathering up in Grass Valley, when we organized, Paul Lidicote, who was pushing us all the way, was our guest speaker. And at that meeting there, we drew up our bylaws and elected officers, and we also named our club. And of course, we called it the California Cornish Cousins. That went over like a lead balloon with the people in the East. But they tried to talk us out of changing, but we stuck with it, and so that's how we got our name, California Cornish Cousins.
What did they want you to change it?
Pardon?
What did they want instead?
Something similar to the National
Heritage.
The Heritage Society had to be in there somewhere. Let's see. I guess. Oh, incidentally, too, at our first meeting in '91, it was the following year in '92 that we had held the nationals in Sacramento. And that was when we were only 1 year old. And we thought that was pretty unique. And that happened to be the first time that any of the organizations got to share the profits with the national, which kind of broke the ice for the rest of the groups. And I think that pretty well covers it.
Thank you, Joe. Paul Lidicote, and there's photographs of him, Maureen has them, and there's some in the scrapbook in the back, was a very dynamic man. He was an educator and had a doctorate, and more than that, had a lot of force and energy behind him. And he really made these Cornish groups go. And when we had, he came to our gathering in 1992, our charter gathering, and persuaded us in a way that only Paul could to put on the national gathering just 1 year later. And I gathered the Cornish American Heritage Society was desperate for someone to put it on. And so we had some ideas of our own.
Yes.
And one of the ideas we had was that we were going to bring a speaker over from Cornwall.
Oh, yeah.
And so we would have conference calls with the group back in the Midwest that called themselves the National Group. They're really the Midwest group. And we said, oh, well, we're going to have Dr. Cecil Todd, the author of The Cornish Miner in America, come over to speak. And they said, you can't do that.
Watch us.
Never been done before. No, no, we don't bring speakers from Cornwall. So, of course, that just encouraged us. And so we brought over Dr. Todd, and we have been bringing speakers and presenters over from Cornwall ever since. Gary Zima is in a long line of very knowledgeable and capable people that we have brought over to help us appreciate our heritage. So, Dick, 1993, the National Gathering, that's about when you stepped in?
Yeah, well, Gage mentioned that some of us had to go to Cornwall to find out about our organization here, and I'm one of them. We mysteriously got an invitation to a conference on Cornwall to be held at Perranporth on the north coast of Cornwall, and the landing place of St. Piran, of course. Anyway, and I don't know where they got our name, but I had a little correspondence with the Institute of Cornish Studies, which was, I think, at that time located in Red Ruth. It's been moved around some. So, looked this thing over, and an invitation, and they weren't, nobody's going to pay our way. We had to pay our own way. But my wife, Judy, who I lost 7 years ago, but Judy was proud of her Cornish affiliation by marriage. Anyway, and always loved to travel. So this thing said, do you want to present a paper? Well, I thought, heck, I'll just, and she was game, so I took him up on, I said I'd do a paper on Grass Valley, the most Cornish town in North America, well, at least in the US of A. So anyway, we went over there and attended that conference. A fellow came up to me after I had given my talk on Grass Valley, as identified himself as Richard Bowden Dan. And he was the, I think, secretary to the London Cornish Association at that time. But he had already launched a little newsletter kind of thing called Cornish Worldwide. And he showed me in the back of it, he had both the Cornish American and this organization listed and who to contact. So we got back and Gage was the person to contact. So I called him and told him, and I said, well, I'd given this talk on Grass Valley and I see you're going to have some bus trip there. And so maybe if I could be of any help. He said, fine, you'll be in charge of the two buses going to Grass Valley. Gage could make you listen to that and not feel bad. So, anyway, we attended the, must have been the second, well, anyway, the first one I attended was that joint one there at Sacramento, and rode herd on the buses, and we were hooked. And so we did some of the Cornish luncheons in Northern California at our church. It was a perfect spot for it. Some of you are nodding, you were there. And Judy would make pasties and saffron bread and other things. I remember made some quarter cake and some figgy oven and that sort of thing. Anyway, then had some involvement I you know how it is, you got to get new presidents right along, and so I got drafted into that, and I set up the meeting at Virginia City, Nevada. Gage has mentioned that. Ron James guided our people all around It was a light turnout, but we had a good time. And I remember we had a drink together afterward. Joe and Maureen probably remember. It was at a little bar that it, and the Cornish in Virginia City mostly lived at Gold Hill. And yes, that's where we were. I don't know if we knew that then, but I know it now, and that probably was somehow attracted us. Anyway, then it was time to name the newsletter, and so Gage, who has a mental inventory of all kinds of things, remembered that I had a Cornish English dictionary and borrowed it and came up with our Kinderweekernuik, which is Cornish cousins, isn't it? And so, anyway, and then I had some other involvement too. I had given my dear old aunt my copy of Cornish Modern America by Dr. A.C. Todd. And I thought, well, I'll just go buy a new one. Because when she died, somebody grabbed it off. And it was way back in Michigan in the Iron Country. So they were out of print. So I just hauled off and got in touch with a publisher, Arthur Clark, which used to be in Glendale, California, and then moved to Spokane, Washington. And I got in touch, and I finally got to talk to the right person and said, what'll it take to get it reprinted? So we have to have orders for a certain number of them. This would be credit card orders. And so I was set to work. I got the membership from the Cornish American and ours and some other odds and ends and gave it to them. They sent out flyers and they came up with enough orders that they published, I think, about 300 or 400 or maybe 700. And it was surprisingly good number. And they held out for a good many years. When it ran out of print, well, I thought, well, I got nothing to lose. I'll try it on them again. And we were able to get enough new orders and they ran another. That was about 350. But in any event, we had to go to Cornwall to learn about it. Just as a kind of an aside, Richard Bowden Dan later became Claire Bowden Dan. Is that right? He had a gender change. And he wrote a really beautiful letter to all the people on his correspondence. See, I wrote some things for his Cornish Worldwide newsletter, and he wrote this really exquisite letter about how he had come to this very powerful conclusion, and then accompanying it was a discussion of the clinical aspects of it. And I can tell you more later, but I won't. Anyhow, that's probably enough for now.
Thank you, Jake. And the republishing of the Cornish Miner in America, Dr. Todd wrote a new introduction for the reprinted edition. And it added a great deal to his life and put him, because he had left Cornwall by that time, and it put him back in touch with a lot of people in Cornwall and with some of his old colleagues, and it really was a wonderful experience for him. One of the things that has made our group so successful, and we are the most successful, I don't know about the ones in Australia, but the ones in North America, we are the most successful Cornish group. And one of the things that has made us so strong is that we always are able to develop new leadership. How many people here have been president of this group?
Do I count?
Yeah, you're about to be. We are, by the way, looking for the next president-elect who is going to succeed Kitty. But if you look through the scrapbook, we have had just a long line of people who have given this group very effective leadership. And so that's part of our great strength. And so I'd like to open it up. I'm not sure who would be sort of next in seniority as far as membership, but maybe that's not so important. If you have a story to tell about how you became part of the group, and you may be next in seniority. Matter of fact, you may be ahead of me. I don't know who signed first. Yeah. So okay. Yes.
I have a story to tell about Dr. Cecil Todd. Gage read Cecil's book when he was young at his grandmother's house. And so when he discovered that Cecil Todd was still alive and was known to Clyde Arbuckle, who was in the story of San Jose. I mean, no matter what you ask Clyde Arbuckle, I mean, you could ask the Reuters question, the answer would always be the history of San Jose. So Gage was in contact with Clyde and said, and Clyde was a friend of Cecil Todd's. And Cecil Todd would come over from Cornwall, from Leamington Spa, and visit Clyde Arbuckle and America in general. So Gage said to Clyde, next time Dr. Todd comes to America, and I understand he's coming in June or whatever it was, I'd like to meet him. I'd like to speak to him. And he said that to Clyde several times. And then June came and went, and we never heard anything about Dr. Todd. So Gage spoke to Clyde Arbuckle at the next opportunity, and Clyde, in his way, said, oh, yes, he was here, but we had no public appearances of any kind. Gage wasn't hoping for a public appearance. He was just trying to meet him scholar to scholar. So Gage kind of was a little annoyed with this. He said, well, okay, we'll just go over and see Cecil Todd where he lives. So Gage wrote to Dr. Todd and said, we're going to be in England, and we'd like to stop by and visit you. And, could we just have a meeting? So Dr. Todd responded and invited us to lunch. Now, we found out later he had no idea who Gage McKinney was, who Ilka Weber was, and which one was the boy and which one was the girl, the husband and the wife, and whether we were married or anything. But we went over and visited him, and he immediately took a shine to us. We had lunch. And I'll tell you, I had trepidation about having lunch at a gentleman's house. He was in his 80s. He was widowed. Now, ladies, how clean was this kitchen going to be? How clean were those dishes going to be? What was that lunch going to be like? I bet it was lovely. We had a lovely lunch, and we proceeded to have a wonderful relationship with Cecil for many years. And the Cornish cousin event in his life, with the resurgence of it, really made the rest of his life a joy. And being a part of you and being a part of this group was a joy for him. And he was a joy in our life. So that's my story of Cecil. Yeah.
And Toddy especially had an affection for California because he spent a year as a visiting scholar at Berkeley and did extensive research when he was in California, both at the Bancroft Library at Berkeley and traveling through the state. And a number of our members, this was in the that book was published in 1969, I think. So this was in the 1960s when he was doing the research. And a number of our members who are not here tonight but are active in our group, including Bill Smitherum and his father, and Russell Pierce, who's one of our past presidents, and his father, met Todd when he was doing research and showed him around and drove him around places, and it was this gentleman, Clyde Arbuckle, the city historian of San Jose, originally met Cecil Todd because Toddy wanted to see New Almaden, and Clyde was an authority on the New Almaden Quicksilver Mine. And not only Todd, but also A.L. Rouse, when he was working on his book at just the same time. Matter of fact, Rouse, being competitive as he was trying to to beat Todd into publication. The Smitherums and the Pierces also helped A.L. Rouse with his research. And then Rouse was a fellow in San Marino at the Huntington Library. So he spent a lot of time every year in California. So our club has been, in some way, involved with these men who have really shaped Cornish history. And at the time Todd and Rouse were working on their book, another scholar named John Rowe was working on yet a third book on America. And John Rowe, who was the most generous of men, was very helpful to Todd while he was working on it. So anyway, three books about the Cornish in America came out within a year, with nothing having really been written on the subject previously. Well, who's next? Yes,
Yvonne. I actually joined in 92, so I do have some seniority. But I'm trying to remember exactly how I connected with the California Cornish Cousins. Those brand cells are gone. Right after I joined, I've been researching my Cornish roots for forever. And right after I joined, I got transferred to Connecticut, and I lived for 4 years in Connecticut. But I got the newsletters, and about that time, 94, I think, 95, I started the Cornish List in the bad old days of the early internet, when we were all connecting on a mailing list. The Cornish List I had, still have actually, started with me at one, and at our highest we had 1,800 members from all over everywhere. Now we're down to about 700. But the thing I did want to say is, when I moved back from Connecticut in 97, I missed that gathering. The next year was Almaden. And my great-grandpa was a miner at Almaden, along with James Pierce, who is his brother-in-law. And I brought my son, Stephen, to that gathering. He was a lender. And I dragged him, until he wouldn't come anymore. Yeah. And then in 2000, whenever we were in San Diego the second time, I started bringing my granddaughter. And my granddaughter now, who's 12 and they'll be here tomorrow, she's come, this will be her fourth. The little ones, so some of you who were in West Valley might remember last year, they did the play of Stinger and the Dragon. They're all Cornish women now. So I think what really made this group special for me is being able to bring first my son Stephen, who even though he's 25 now and isn't going to come, he's got it in his blood, and my granddaughters really are picking it up. And I think that's what's going to keep us alive, really, is getting our kids and grandkids into the group, because, you know, we're not going to be here forever. Probably not in 30 or 40 years. But we won't be here forever. So, you know, we've got to bring along the younger ones as well. And so I'm working on my granddaughters, and they absolutely loved it last year, thanks to Jimmy Beth. They just had such a good time. And I think that's what keeps it going. So I just want to share that.
Someone else?
Yes. And mine actually has nothing to do with my heritage. It actually, because I don't do research, so don't kill me. But I got a letter in 2001 from a gal in San Diego, and she said, "Hi, my name is Judy. I'm your cousin. Never heard of her." And come to find out, our grandmothers were sisters, and she does a phenomenal amount of research. I love what I see. We actually got a census from 1910 that we thought we had some scandal going on there, because we saw Grandma was divorced, but it was wrong. In 1920, she was again widowed. So, but Judy, I first met her at the Jackson so she's put me back in touch with my roots, and my father actually didn't even know that he was Cornish. So that was something that we brought back to the family. And we had a family reunion in 2001 or 2002 in Boise, Idaho, where all of my family is. They actually worked in the mines in Colorado. I have a grandfather who was buried in a white ash mine. They left in Golden. And she came and talked about that heritage. She did the research, and she came and talked to my family, who knew nothing about their heritage, about where they had come from. And we had the whole length of a garage, our genealogy, our family tree. And people came up and were writing on it. Kids that had been added, it was quite a phenomenal thing. So that's how I got started with this group. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead, Jen.
Okay. I got started. Well, I've been working on my family history since whatever the movie Roots came out. Before that, and I thought when that came out, I was but anyway, I know my grandmother used to say that her family came from England, and from Land's End, England. That's all we knew. And so while she died in 77, but before she died, you know, like the early 70s, I started asking her questions about, you know, family members and this and that. And she was very good at labeling things. So when she moved, she was born in Nevada City. Her mother was born in Nevada City, and her father came there in the mid-1850s. So I found out from her lots of names, and she said, oh, there's skeletons, but I'm not going to tell you about it, but I was going, oh, you know, I was just couldn't wait to hear what it was, and it turned out to be nothing, but back in those days it was something. But anyway, I found out that my she was my father's mother. Both my father's parents were Cornish, and my father's entire side of the family is 100% Cornish. I mean, there's nothing else but Cornish. My mother's side, my mother's mother's all side is all Cornish. My mother's father's side, we don't talk about. They just aren't Cornish, but we just joke around. But anyway, so that makes me 75% Cornish. So I go, oh, well, what's Cornish? What's that? So then I found out that Land's End, England was actually, you know, Cornwall. So then I got interested in all of that. So I found out that there were ways to find out things, and, you know, and I joined the Cornish Family Heritage Society a long time ago. I remember number 1195, and now there's like, I don't know, 27,000 members or something like that. I've been a member all along. The newsletters up there on the front desk, the front table, those are, you know, journals that come out quarterly. I've got all of them since, I don't know, 1970-something when I joined, I guess it was. But it used to be, what are your names you're looking for, so you'd send it in. So I had, six Cornish families came here. None of them knew each other. They came from everywhere, from Kokalik, from St. Just, all the way out to Calstock, you know, all the way along Cornwall. None of them knew each other at all. They all ended up in Nevada City, one way or the other. Through Gold Hill, Virginia City, New Almaden. Some of them lived in Pennsylvania for a short time, and they didn't like the weather, so they came out here. A couple of them were in Connecticut, same thing, they came out here. So they all ended up in Nevada City eventually. And, you know, then my parents met each other in the San Pacific in Stockton. And but anyway, so this thing I sent in, you know, the names I was looking for, I got a letter from a guy named, all right, blank here, Beskeen, Norman?
Mark.
Mark.
Mark. Mark Beskeen.
And saying, hey, you know, we are related, kind of like you got from Judy. Now, Judy, by the way, heard about it from me, because when I did the first one in San Diego in 99, they did a big news article in the East County newspaper, and she picked that one and called me, so that's wonderful. But anyway, so Mark Beskeen wrote to me and said, you know, I'm looking for the Thomas family, and I went, psh, that's Smith, you know, but we compared family trees, and come to find out his great-grandmother was my great-grandfather's sibling, you know, and we compared family lists. Okay, yes, we are. He said, by the way, I'm the president of the California Cornish Cousins. I said, huh, what? So that's how I found out that. So the first time I came to one of these was New Almaden, which was significant because that's where my grandfather was born, in 1891 or something like that. So I've been coming to every single one since then. So, but I've learned a lot more about my family since, and I've been to Cornwall twice, and either a lot more in the last few years than I've been getting over. But, you know, so I've just really gotten into it, and so, you know, the six families, and then the wives' families, I've gone back several generations, and it's just been a lot of fun. So that's my guy.
Thanks, Jan. And Mark was very clever when he was president, and he would go through the publications, the Cornwall Family History Society, looking for people in California and write to them. And Dick Chamberlain has done even more of that. He'll go through, I think, just about any publication that comes into his hand looking for Cornish people. Yes, and write to them. Yeah. Well, one of the things that has been so vital in our club has been the newsletter. And for many of our members, and over the years there have been so many members, and I know this is something Joe talked about from the beginning, so many members who, maybe because of their age or for other reasons, they never came to an event, but they got their newsletter, and that was their connection with the club. And they would often write to one of the officers or to people that they saw with a common family name. And so we've had, I don't know who the first newsletter editor was.
That was Velma Scholl.
Velma?
Yeah, she's in that picture there, Velma Scholl.
And it, at some point I took it over, and I don't know if there was someone between Velma and
Bert up in Washington.
Well, and then Bert.
Bert Terise.
Well, then Bert Terise took it over for me and did it for at least 10 years.
Oh, yeah,
he did a long time. Yeah, and now we have Burnett doing a wonderful job and putting out a wonderful product. And I'm going to call on you because I know you're not shy, and ask you how you got connected with this group.
Well, thank you, Dave. I enjoy it. The newsletter is a lot of fun. Of course, it keeps me connected with the roots. I think the first event that we went to was when Julie Beth cooked the pasties. I must.
Knight's Ferry.
There are three Trigoni brothers. Pete's with me today. We're representing the plant today. But our youngest one, Stuart, is actually the family historian. And he became a member of this group pretty early on, I think.
Yes, he did.
I don't know.
Yes,
that,
he did. A long time
I don't
ago.
Know that he's been to a gathering because he's not been to one since I've been a member. But I know he's met you, Dave, and he's talked to you.
I think I've only met him once, and I forget what event that was. Yeah.
But it's interesting, because my great-grandfather was at New Almaden, and his picture hangs on the wall in the museum. I guess it's going to come back. I hope it'll come back when everything's rebuilt.
Yes.
And it was pretty amazing to go somewhere and see this guy on the wall. And he looks just like Uncle Billy, you know, he's part of the family, you know, you can just can't escape it. But I almost wondered why my grandmother Trigoni never made a pasty. Never once in her life. And we never talked about the heritage. We had that name and that's the way it was. Well, I soon found out that she wasn't Cornish, she was a Scot. But Jen mentioned UOP. Our youngest granddaughter, is starting at UOP in Stockton. next year, and I'm going to have to warn Emily about this. Be wary of this, the Cornishman, because that's what happened to my grandfather Trigoni. He was going to school at UOP when it was in San Jose. And my grandmother was sent down from the coast, Mendocino Coast, to go to college. And that's where they met. She grabbed him and took him up to the coast. And I've had experiences where my first year of college, European history, the teacher's gambit was to talk about names for heritage. When she came to me, she asked me what I knew. And I didn't know a thing. And she really chewed me out for the class. A name like that, you don't know your heritage. I was working in the city. This is probably when I was in my 30s, making a sales call in South San Francisco. And I introduced myself to the gentleman, and he had this real heavy British accent. The first thing he said to me is, "Do you know what your name means?" I had not the foggiest idea. But all these things, you know, see, well, maybe I. So now I have the book of corny surnames, and I know what my name means, at least to some people. But I wasn't really aware of the organization until I guess I joined as a result of Stuart's interest. And the October meeting at Knightsbury, we ought to go. And so Marilyn, who is a Swede, my wife, she's all Scandinavian blood. She said, "Okay, let's go." And she had a bad ankle, so she weren't using a crutch. And we went over there, and Knightsbury is a place that we've gone by so many times. We had such a great time. That's Dick. Taught me all about hard rock mining with his tools and all that kind of stuff. He was so nice to tell me what a great Cornish name I had, you know, all this sort of thing. And I was talking to everybody like I tend to do. And Marilyn was tired because of her ankle. She went out and sat in the car and waited for me to come. She was out there for about a half hour.
Oh, days.
I get a hustle out to leave. Get in the car. I said, "Hi, honey, how you going?" "Okay, let's go." "Sorry to keep you waiting." Start the car up and drive off. And we're heading west back to Mill Valley. I think we get to Escalade. She says, "Wait a minute." I said, "What?" "My crutch." "Where's my crutch?" She had said it on the side of the car. I didn't even notice it. It was on her side. I just drove off and left her crutch there in the parking lot.
And we couldn't
remember. She was pure. Yeah. It was almost like, you know, Haile. I didn't want to go back. Knightsbury was too far back to go. We wanted to go home. Anyway, that's my introduction to the Cornish cousins. And we haven't made any of the trips to Southern California. That's something we should do the next time around. But I've enjoyed all the other trips. And Maryland as well. She's been surprised by cousins from Sweden that she never knew she had, you know, so we all go through this. Anyhow, I'm really happy and delighted to share whatever this little anecdote with you.
Dick, why don't you go ahead? Well,
yeah, listening to everybody talking about these kinships and all, I think of my dear sainted cousin, beautiful Cornish name, Olive Trevorrow. And I know friend Maureen Pascoe, and that's Cornish. She says Trevorrow is a lovely old Cornish name. Well, we were visiting with Olive and her brother, she was talking about family heritage and this and that, and the kinships that are there, and you can see it, and that's why the name Cousins is so darn appropriate, not just from Cousin Jack's, but we really are awful close. My cousin, Olive Trevorrow, says, "Dick," said, "we'd be some queer lot. We married too many first cousins."
Well, I think throughout the weekend, maybe stirred by this, we'll have a lot more memories to share. And so we're going to end up with Kitty, our president elect speaking last, but Julie, you...
I got into the Sierra Club because I was leading Sierra Club outings in Sonoma County, and the person in charge of the outings committee was Clark Knapp Kemper, and his wife, Joan Knapp Kemper, was in the Cornwall Family History Society, and she told me about this outfit. And I also met Stuart Tregoning through the Sierra Club because the Tregonings have given their jug handle farm to be an environmental center. And there was a Sierra Club outing that went there from Sonoma County.
If you go to the Jug Handle Guest Ranch,
yes,
which you can do today and stay, you're staying in my great-grandfather Jefferson's home.
Well,
it's fascinating that it's still there. It's 125, 30 years old, whatever.
Well, I'm not sure. We were at the Jug Handle Creek Farmhouse. Is that the same?
Yeah, that's it.
That was
Grandpa Jefferson's.
Okay. Well, there we were, and Stuart came in and gave the group a salmon, a whole salmon. I mean, he gutted it, there it was, and went away again. And so the ladies, mostly ladies on these outings, you know, were like, oh, they flew up in the bows and they didn't know what to do. And I had invited my mother to this, and my parents at that time lived in southern Mendocino County, and so she knew how to do this. She said, oh, for heaven's sake, Julie, we'll show them how. And so we got some celery and onions and lemon and stuffed the salmon and wrapped it in foil and baked it in the oven, and which is what we always did at home, and there it was.
Beautiful.
We'll also cook it in the dishwasher.
Yee!
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Well,
this is an old farmhouse.
It wasn't very much.
It was
that.
Sorry.
There was a wood stove, and Julie, you have a lot of seniority. What was the first gathering that you came to?
I can't remember, but I think it was in the Valley City.
Right.
I haven't come to them all.
I don't know if Jeannie will get up and speak, but Jeannie and John, they don't have any question. They just want to hang out with us.
There's a naturalization ceremony by Gage.
They were naturalized.
Have they taken the test yet?
And Jeannie and John are part of the group that keep the new Almaden Quicksilver Park going and operating, and they've been involved with that group for a long, long time. So
nothing bonds us like humiliation. We've been coming back for 9 years, and I think that our initiation is one thing that, after I sat down after initiation, I thought to myself, what am I doing here? We keep coming back.
Well, and you may have been at New Almaden
when
Todd came over for our first for our gathering in 1993. We also had a potluck dinner for him, I think, at New Almaden, which he, and Clyde Arbuckle was there, his friend, and Toddy really enjoyed that. It was a really lovely evening for him. And